This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Peter is one more day on vacation. I believe he's out in Montauk enjoying himself. He took Bear the dog, which is important.
Yes.
And he will rejoin us tomorrow, so we'll be back and as good as new. Don, I did something that that really falls under the heading of moronic.
Okay.
So while we were just having our, you know, we always have a Zoom call before the show, I was super gluing something, and I got it all over my hands.
Oh, no.
And now my thumb, which is the finger that unlocks my iPad and my iPhone, I guess the fingerprint has been changed because there's all dried up super glue on it and it won't come off. And I'm having a hard time opening up my devices.
Well, you can do it with the number still, can't
you? I know, but it's too long of a process.
Oh, dear God. That is such a first world problem.
Well, who's the guy? It's like when you were you on the plane.
They don't even have like the TV like in the back of the seat,
right?
And yeah. I got destroyed for it. And meanwhile, you now have to put in your code manually, and we're supposed to feel bad for you.
Well,
you
see, get a free movie,
putting in,
right? All right, but you got to download the app.
If I'm putting in my code manually, we're on TV. People are going to figure out what it is, so I have to go put it under the
table. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I see.
This is awful. Just awful. It's all over my hands. Oh,
this is like American Pie 2.
You think so?
Exactly.
Thank you. We got so much to talk about. We have Steve Nash a little bit later on, new coach of the Brooklyn Nets. They had their big press conference, announced him. Yes, had it on at noon. If you missed it, it'll be on after the Yankee game tonight. We have Steve Levy, the new play-by-play voice of Monday Night Football. I've known Steve forever, and what an honor that is to be in that position. The people that have been in that position, in that booth, it's pretty amazing. So I'm happy for him, and we'll talk with him a little bit later on. And it's really hard to believe, Donald, but football starts tomorrow, and what a game tomorrow, too.
Sure.
And I don't know if you feel like this, but I do. I don't feel like it's the beginning of football season. I feel like it's kind of like it's been sprung on me. I usually have this really butterfly anticipation for it, and I'm not saying that I'm not anticipating it, because I am, but I don't have the same feelings because I'm flying blind here. I don't know what to expect.
There's a lot of things at play here. I mean, first of all, you've got it coming out of nowhere.
Right.
Like it's been lying in the weeds here. We've been knee-deep in basketball and hockey and baseball, and it's just strange schedule and just so much going on after so much not happening for like 3.5-4 months. And usually when football begins, Michael, it begins in September as we get kind of just past the dog days of baseball, and basketball and hockey aren't close to starting yet, so we kind of anticipate football and kind of looking forward to it, especially if your baseball team's out of it. I mean, think about it, Michael. If this were normal circumstances and the Yankees were 500 in September and the Mets were out of it, we'd be like, God, can we just get football started already? But we've been knee-deep in so much going on, and there's been no preseason and very little like coming out of the football that all of a sudden Thursday, bang, there it's going to be, and it'll be the biggest thing. Because even though I do think the ratings may be affected by everything else that's going on, it's still going to win out. It's still going to get the majority of the attention. So we're going like 0 to 60 to 0 to 100 from nothing going on to everything going on to now the cherry on top, the biggest sport getting started. It's just going to be an incredible month of September.
Yeah, it'll be amazing. So we'll experience it with every one of you as well, because again, we have not seen a football game. We have no idea the level of play. I was listening to Adam Schefter on Greeny's show. By the way, if you haven't heard Greeny's show, please tune in. It's so good.
Please.
From 1 to 2. Now, I can't tell you about Kellerman's show because that's when I come up here to do the show, but I'm in my car from 1 to 2, and Greeny's show, you can't turn it off. I mean, he's unbelievable with teases. Anyway, so Schefter said that he hopes it's not the case, but he does worry about a proliferation of injuries. They haven't played a meaningful down except against each other. And I think people are going to be dropping like flies like you see in baseball. I think that that's what's going to happen, because when you don't have contact and all of a sudden you have contact, it's going to be jarring. And I don't mean that literally. It's going to be jarring, both literally and figuratively. I think people are going to get hurt.
Well, look at Von Miller. You know, it looks like he's out for the season. In
the
Denver.
Last play of practice.
Last play of, like, non-contact practice.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, that there's an example where a team loses its best defensive player. And, listen, injuries affect everyone in every sport, but football especially, Michael, because, you know, in a salary cap era, it's not like the next man up is deserving of a starting position. Right? Because if they were deserving of a starting position, they'd be starting someplace else, right? They're backups for a reason. So we saw it with the Jets. You lose Sam Darnold, you all of a sudden you're playing your third-string quarterback, your season's over. So you lose an offensive lineman, that leads to maybe losing your quarterback. You pluck a couple of good defensive players away, as we saw C.J. Mosley go down against Buffalo last year, and the next thing you know, the Jets, you know, have their season come to an end. And so you're thin to begin with, even at the best of situations. But between the opt-outs and the possibility of injury, that's why the season is so wide open. That's why it's kind of folly to even look at, oh, the Jets have a tough schedule. Yeah, they do have a tough schedule based off of last year. But with the pandemic and the possibility of injuries and everything kind of just being up in the air, who's to say who's going to be great and who's going to be good and who's going to be average and who's going to stink?
You have no idea.
We're going to have no idea.
No, I mean, we have to pick games this weekend. It's really going to be throwing a dart at a board. I mean, how do we – we have no idea. Well, and we're going to sit here and I'm going to tell you we have no idea.
Week one is always difficult to begin with anyway because what's preseason? Well, what do you buy into? What do you believe with preseason? Because all we're ever told, even by coaches, hey, it's just preseason. These games don't mean anything. Now they disappeared.
Yep.
All I got on these teams are what some of the privileged media guys that have been able to go to practice have been allowed to see. But even those guys are put in the dark. Like they're told not to tweet out certain formations. So we don't really have any idea. All we can base it off is what we saw last year. And there's been a lot of changes from last year to this year between opt-outs and draft picks and free agents changing teams. So we're going to have to spend maybe the first half of the year, Michael, not knowing exactly how good teams are or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we've got that, and we'll get deeper into football tomorrow, the Chiefs against the Texans. I think there's going to be about $750 million in quarterback salaries on the field tomorrow. So that's kind of phenomenal. And then we'll start to break down the Jets and the Giants for the weekend as well. Islanders today with, I mean, not to be hyperbolic here, they have to win this game. Because Don mentioned earlier, it's not like they go back to the island after game two. They're going to stay in that same spot in Edmonton. And if they get waxed tonight, that's not a good sign, especially if they lose 8-2 in the first game. So they've got to put up a decent showing. Now, if they lose 2-1 in overtime or 4-3 in overtime, that's a different story. But if they get dominated again, Don, I think it's game over.
Yeah, especially now with Clutterbuck's going to be a game-time decision. This is the last thing you need is to have injuries. This is such a good Tampa team, and you've got to play at your absolute best to hang with them. And I think this will be a good indication. You make a good point. You lose in overtime. Hey, at least you showed that game one was an aberration. But still, you put yourself in a situation where you're going to have to win four of the next five games against what I believe is the best team in the league. So boy, to get this even at one is going to be very, very important tonight.
So that's tonight. We'll have the game right here, by the way.
Yes.
On 98.7 after our show. So tune in. We'll have all the play-by-play. Chris King does a great job, so you definitely want to tune in. Now, funny thing. So you all know that we have our Zoom meeting. It's Don's face and Andrew and Ryan and RJ, and when Peter's doing the show, him as well. And I actually said to Andrew, I said, do we open with the Yankees again? I mean, what different can you say? And Andrew actually said, it's the story, Michael. It is the story, and he's right. So we start off with the Yankee Pinstripe Report brought to you by Budweiser. Don, when you have Jeff Van Gundy once told me, when you have a meeting, you better be playing the worst team in the league the next game. And if you're a baseball team, if you have a meeting, you better have your best pitcher on the mound that next game. Because if the team falls flat after the meeting, which is what Brian Cashman had before yesterday's game, where exactly do you go? So where do the Yankees go after getting shut down 2-1? The only run they scored was on a sac fly. And, you know, the Blue Jays starter, Taijuan Walker, couldn't throw a strike. He kept walking people. The Yankees had opportunities galore. They could not get a big hit. Gary Sanchez went hitless in his return to the lineup. Jay Happ pitched really well. He got one out into the seventh inning, made one mistake, the two-run home run to Jonathan Davis, and it held up. So the Yankees have lost five in a row. They're now a 500 team. You know the last time they were a 500 or worse team in the month of September? 1995. So it's been a long time. This team has had a sustained run of excellence. And, you know, Brian Cashman told them in the meeting, I believe in you. There's no help coming in that door. It's us. And he didn't mean that Judge and Stanton weren't coming in. He said, that, you know, there's no minor leagues. We are what we are. And we think that we have enough in this room to do it. Well, as the Yankees were losing, Don, the Mets, who by the way, have the greatest cover of all time, because the Mets stink right now.
They are awful.
And nobody talks about it because the Yankees are the big story. So the Yankees are giving them this unbelievable cover that they can't win. They might not make the playoffs. But now the Orioles were the team that happened to be beating the Mets.
Yeah.
So now the Yankees and the Orioles are essentially knotted in the loss column. It's going to be a really sketchy final 18 games for the Yankees. One more game against the Blue Jays tonight. And I'm going to tell you right now, I don't prognosticate on baseball that much. I think the Yankees will come alive against Tanner Roark. I think that they can score runs against this guy. He has not been good. He's not an elite sort of pitcher. And we'll see if the Yankees can, with Davey Garcia making his third big league start, if he could call hold down a pretty spunky Toronto team. But that win yesterday, Don, by Toronto now gives them a three-game lead over the Yankees.
I know.
So three games with 17 left, with 18 left to play is not easy. The Yankees have now completely priced themselves out of winning division because they're not going to make up all those games to catch the Tampa Bay Rays. It's getting late in a hurry. It's getting late early, as Yogi used to say.
Yeah, and they caught a break. Seattle lost to the Giants last night, and I still don't believe in Seattle or Detroit, so they might still make it just because, not that they're great, but because the teams that are chasing after them just won't be able to take advantage of it. But Baltimore is an interesting team. They are. And the Yankees do control their destiny against them. They have games left with Baltimore.
Four so more starting tomorrow.
It's not here. The end of the world, but let's get back to Cashman. So he goes and talks to the team. Obviously, he felt that there was some purpose to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Walker was not great last night. He didn't have command of his fastball. The Yankees were getting runners in scoring position. He was just begging to get hit. He had like 90 pitches in four innings, right? So it's not like some, you know, Dave Steeb came out, the ghost of Dave Steeb came down there from the 80s and shut them down. Walker was hittable, and they couldn't take advantage. 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Their only run was a sacrifice fly. And you got a great performance from Jay Happ, completely wasted. So that's what's got to be frustrating, Michael, is that did that speech work? Because it wasn't like a great pitcher shut you down. It was a pitcher begging to get hit last night. And the Yankees couldn't do it. And now they're 500, and we had Keyshawn Johnson on yesterday. And he said, listen, I can't speak for baseball, but I know in football, whenever we'd get those management meetings, players roll their eyes. They don't want to hear it. You know, these are athletes. They're focused on their thing. He doesn't think things like that really work. Because it's got to come from the coach. It's got to come from somebody in that room. When somebody from management parachutes in, most players just roll their eyes. Now, you know the Yankees better than Keyshawn does, better than I do. But that performance last night gives you maybe an indication that it didn't work. It didn't spur anything on. Because maybe they just don't look at Brian Cashman as that guy to do something like that. Because he's not with them every single day. Maybe that's got to come from somebody that's closer to them.
It was a dangerous gambit by Brian. It worked in 2009. Francisco Cervelli hit a big home run for the against the Braves. The Yankees were losing the game after five innings, and Brian said, according to the book Mission 27, which is about the 2009 championship, he said, wow, that meeting didn't work, and all of a sudden Girardi got thrown out of the game, and the Yankees came alive and won the game, and they never looked back. But it's a gambit because, you know, after the game yesterday, DJ LeMahieu said, I've never had a GM come and talk to the team. So when he was at the Rockies and obviously last year with the Yankees. And when a GM talks to the team, you're kind of like usurping the power of the manager. I mean, that's the manager's job. The manager's job is to talk to the team. And when the GM steps in, he's kind of saying, you know what? It's not working. The message you're getting from the manager and the coach is not working. So I'm going to say something. And then when it doesn't work and falls flat, you just lay an egg. Now, the Yankees played a cleaner game yesterday. They had one error. It was a drop foul ball by Gary Sanchez, which turned out to be big because it made Happ throw a lot more pitches, and he probably could have gone through seven, but it didn't affect them run-wise. But I will tell you this, Don. where do you go from here? I mean, when you have a meeting and you fall flat, where do you go from here? Especially when you've usurped some of the manager's territory. That's Aaron Boone's territory, is to meet with the team. And Brian Cashman felt that they had to hear from him. And if it had worked, nobody would have second-guessed it. Well, it didn't work. And now you have to depend on a kid, a 21-year-old kid in Davey Garcia, to stop you from getting swept by the Blue Jays. Because if you lose tonight,
right,
then catching the Blue Jays is probably out. Now, you still play them seven times after this, but why would you beat them seven times if you haven't been able to beat them the three times now? Even if you take four out of three, you're not making up four games. So today is a really important game to get into second place, because second place assures you of going to the playoffs. Right now, the Yankees are in an area where things could go wrong, and they might not make the playoffs, which is hard to believe.
I just think it's incumbent on just trying to stir things up just a little bit. To me, they just look very lethargic. They look like a team that is analytically driven, right? They just seem like a team that, well, they're supposed to go to the playoffs, and this is the way things are. There doesn't seem to be a lot of heart, a lot of soul. And you've got a manager, and he was hired to do this. I get it, to be supportive of the players. But at what point do you throw that away for a second and finally just give it to those guys? Now, maybe he's doing it behind the scenes. If he's doing it behind the scenes, Michael, it's not working. But even Parcells sometimes would go and use the media to kind of stir up the room a little bit, because maybe this team does deserve to be kind of publicly embarrassed. Maybe this team deserves to get ripped a little. I know the fans are sick and tired of hearing the encouragement from Aaron Boone after the game and the press conference. We believe in these guys. We're going to get it together. Maybe it's time for him to step up and to start calling some of these guys out, that they've got to play better. Because you can't keep using injuries as an excuse, Michael. There's a lot of good players in that lineup last night. It's a lot of good players. I mean, right now, Brett Gardner's an automatic out with runners in scoring position. What is he, like 0 for 11?
And Mike Talkman's an automatic out.
Talkman's an automatic out. Ford hasn't been good. He's batting like a .150. You've got Sanchez that's an automatic out. Michael, I can go up there and strike out seven straight times. I can guarantee you that.
He's hitting 120. There's 18 games left in the season. He's hitting 120, which is really hard to believe.
All right, so there's time for encouragement. There's time that you got to try to pick your guys up. And then there's times to just say, hey, guys, I'm sorry. I can't support you anymore. Forget about resting guys. You know, maybe it's time to start, like, benching guys and getting in their face a little bit.
Yeah, because, but you know what? I look at it like this. It's like yelling at the heavyset kid in school when he can't climb the rope. If you yell at him, he still can't climb the rope. If he doesn't have the ability to climb the rope, he can't climb it. You can't yell at somebody to make them do something that they can't do.
But you can when you've got players that have immense talent that aren't living up to their expectations. As you said, maybe Talkman and Ford, maybe things are kind of balancing out for them, right? They were minor leaguers, and now maybe they've been exposed. But you've got true major leaguers in this lineup, right, that are not doing their job. And I don't know, there's nothing wrong with calling them out for not doing their job. Because no one believes that this is really, even with the injuries, a 500 club. Is this an average club? Do they have average talent, Michael? Even with Judge and Stanton hurt, do they have average talent? No. So if I'm trying to get more out of them, it's not, you can't tell me about the fat kid in the gym. Because I don't expect anything from them. But we're opening with the Yankees day in and day out, ripping them for being a lousy ball club when they shouldn't be. So that means they're not the fat kid in the gym trying to climb the rope. That they're a team that should be combating with the Rays for the best record in the American League. A team that should be maybe not as good as the Los Angeles Dodgers, but right in the vicinity of the Dodgers. Not a team that right now the San Francisco Giants have a better record than the New York Yankees. The Miami Marlins have a better record than the New York Yankees. I don't care how many games have been played. I don't care where we are in the season. Does that make sense to you, Michael? The teams in rebuild have better records than the New York Yankees, who are expected to compete for a championship?
No. It is incredibly hard to believe. It's incredibly hard to believe. I don't know what's going on. I look at a guy like Talkman, who was such a revelation last year. He's such a good defensive player. And I thought he had the key at bat yesterday. So Walker loads the bases in the first inning. Can't throw a strike. He's 3-1. 3-1. And that's a pitch that you have to drive. And I don't get it, Don. I don't understand it. But Talkman has lost the ability to hit a fastball. And he didn't drive the ball. He lofted a really soft fly ball to left field and got Walker out of it. And that, I think that set the tone. Because if you get a big hit there, then all of a sudden you start to believe, hey, the meeting worked. Hey, there was something to it. But a weak fly ball to left field to end the inning, that was not good. That was not good.
I'm watching that, Michael, expecting the Yankees to just have a big inning and just blow up. That's where I really thought it was all going to happen for them. And then, you know, 3-1, bases loaded. He can't find the strike zone, can't command, and then you basically pop out. That was a huge opportunity lost, and they never got it back. And I was still waiting for that moment. Even in the ninth inning, I'm waiting for them to just have that big moment where they just come back and they take the lead and they close it out and they get the win. I was really expecting that. And they got a couple of decent at-bats at the end where the guys were up 2-0 and you thought, all right, maybe something's going to happen here. And I think the last two batters, he went full and still got strikeouts.
Yeah, it's again, I'm sorry to everybody out there because it's like a broken record, but I mean, when the New York Yankees are in this sort of shape where they're 5-15 over the last 20 games and what looked like, I mean, let's not be dishonest with people. I think Don and I would have bet our houses that there was no way the Yankees would make the playoffs. We would have bet our homes.
Of course.
I mean, eight game playoff out of 15 teams, and the Yankees might not make it. Now, I still believe they're going to make it. They're better than the Orioles. Let's see what they do this week, and in four games, that could decide the whole thing. If the Orioles come in here and take 3 out of 4, then you all better start getting nervous. Then it's a legitimate time to get nervous. Right now, you should be sweating. I think the Yankees should be sweating, but it's still doable.
But don't you get the feeling, Michael, that it's doable not for anything they will do, but what Baltimore, Seattle, and Detroit won't do?
Yeah, those teams are in rebuild. Yeah, they're in teardown.
That those teams just aren't good enough to sustain over that period of time, and that the Yankees will still find a way to be able to get in, more so than the Yankees all of a sudden rattling off 9 of 10 and then distancing themselves and competing again for the race for the division. It's just going to be that the teams that are chasing after them aren't good enough. Seattle sold at the deadline. You know, and they came out of nowhere and won 6 in a row, but I don't think that team is as good as the Yankees. I don't think Baltimore is either. But
no way. No way.
But at some point, you know, there's only 18 games left. I mean, we could talk about the sample being small. It's just 42 games. And 162, that'd be a small sample. But in 60, that's basically the season. You know, so what's going to change in the next 18? And not only will we have bet our house at the beginning of the season, how comfortable will we be betting our houses at 16-6 to start the season?
Oh my goodness!
Right?
Well, you'd bet your house, and you'd bet your children's house.
So you can't even say, "Well, you know, the pandemic; these guys really didn't want to play." We had a caller suggest yesterday that they really don't want to win this year because it's going to have an asterisk. Then how do you explain 16-6 to start the season? Everything seemed fine then. They seemed like they were handling the pandemic then.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
You think that even Peter has the show on and in the home where he's staying in Montauk?
No, why would he? I mean, this is the middle of the day. He'd be on the beach, no?
Well, it's 3 o'clock now.
What do you mean?
Usually you're on the beach at noon.
And then you go back to the house what time?
Maybe about 4.
All right, so the answer is no. It's before 4. So no, he doesn't.
He doesn't look like a real, you know, George Hamilton, I'm going to tan myself to bronze type of guy. Just saying.
Okay, well, whatever he's doing, he's not watching us.
It's hurtful. You expect people, you know, watch us.
Yeah, but I can understand somebody on vacation not watching us.
I think that we're very, very vacation friendly.
I peeked in during my vacation.
I did, too. I watched a lot. Listen. Also, we didn't go. Well, you did go on your vacation. You did go somewhere,
yeah.
Right?
But, you know, you've got your device where you can kind of just shout out, hey, ESPN New York. And then, boom, you're listening on the beach or by the pool. Take us with you, people.
Yeah. Starting tomorrow, get back in the habit. It's important. Get back in the habit, because when the world kind of paused on March 11th, you and us, we were all riding high. This was the show, baby. Still is. But get back into the habit. Get near a radio tomorrow. Boom. 98.7 ESPN. That's when you do it.
Well, I don't know whether it was yesterday or the day before. It must have been yesterday that Brandi Scott gave a traffic report. and there was actual traffic. It made me feel good. Normally, traffic does not make me feel good, but didn't it kind of feel normal to hear that there's a 45-minute backup at the tunnel? Like, yeah, people are getting back to work. They're getting in their cars and trying to get back to normal. It's not normal yet, but it's definitely more normal than it was back in March and April.
That's true. Well, let's hope for normalcy. This portion of the K-Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by OddsTrader.com, where the pros go to handicap. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Pete in Brooklyn to start it off on the phones. What's up, Peter?
Hey, Michael, Don, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Tremendous. I mean, Michael, you've been following the Yankees forever, so correct me if I'm wrong. The Yankees, not the fans, the Yankees define success by winning championships. Using that as a criteria, Brian Cashman has been successful once in the last 20 years and has spent $4 billion in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we only hearing about Aaron Boone? I mean, because Cashman introduced this wonderful analytics, which enables a team to win 100 games in the regular season in a league where half the teams don't even field a competitive roster. Is that why? I mean, Yankee fans, who's giving him a pass? Are the Steinbrenners just blindly loyal to him? Or why aren't, I mean, just educate me, please, Michael, because I'm missing something.
Well,
when you look at Ben Farrington and Dave Dombrowski get fired 2 years after they won a World Series, why are we still talking about Cashman after 11?
Well, you know, we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago, Pete, and it's a good discussion. You know, the reason that Charrington and Dombrowski lost their job is because they won a championship and then the team crashed into last place. So one thing that Cashman never does, they never crash into last place. They're always competitive. They always field the competitive team. Now, the championship or bust, I don't think that's realistic in today's sports. That was George Steinbrenner's mantra. Yeah, they still try to win a championship every single year, but I don't think they look at it as a failure if they win 103 games and don't win a championship. So I think that Hal Steinbrenner has the utmost confidence in Brian Cashman to field a team that has a chance to win a championship every single year, and I think that they have a chance every single year.
But when you look at some of the moves, Michael, it may not be to the level when George was here, but the mission statement's still to win a championship. They fired a manager after going to game seven of the league championship.
But he was
going to 2017.
Hal said on the show he was going to get fired if they won the championship.
Okay, but the point is that a lot of the near misses before 2017, even though they were competitive and above 500 and gone to the playoffs, still was not considered enough. You know, and 203 wins over the last 2 years was not considered enough because then they went out and paid $350 million over 9 years to Gerrit Cole. So they make moves, Michael, to try to improve because they look upon not going to the World Series, not winning a championship, a failure. Now, maybe it's not to the level it was with George, but it's still there because we're still talking about a team that has had a lot of success since 2009 and yet a lot of changes and a lot of money has been spent over that period of time, too, to try to get more championships.
Again, I don't think that Hal is blindly loyal because that would indicate that he's just not a smart guy. He's one of the smartest people I've dealt with. Very, very shrewd, but I just think he has a belief in Brian that Brian's going to field the team that has a chance to win a championship every single year.
Well,
and they do. That's why this is so shocking.
But I think in the analytic world, not winning a championship just gets filed under, just wasn't our year. Just wasn't in the cards, right? Remember, analytics were built upon Billy Beane and the Oakland A's. They never won in the postseason. They went to the postseason, but they never won in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so don't you feel like the analytic world always has an excuse when you don't win as well? That just, hey, those are the percentages. That's what it's a crapshoot, right? That's what Billy Beane always said. You get to the playoffs, it's a crapshoot. So if the Yankees are so analytically driven, they probably look at Brian Cashman and they pay him for the regular season, and you just hope everything falls into place in the postseason. All right. That explains everything up until now when you start to look at the regular season, and now they may not even get that opportunity to have it just be a crapshoot in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's very complicated because I do believe that analytics work beautifully over 162 games. In shorter series, I think that there's a shorter sample size where things could go awry, and I think that we see that things do sometimes go awry, that the analytics don't play out in the seventh game of a series. And I believe that right now, I think that analytics are submarining this team right now. I think they are overanalyzed. I think people are overthinking when they're at the plate. They've changed Gary Sanchez's setup behind the plate so he could frame pitches better. And I think that that has entered his head. I think that they've tried to they talk about pitch sequences rather than just go out there and throw your best pitch. I think that Mike Tauchman has been overanalyzed because last year he was a line drive hitter. Now they're looking to see if he can launch the ball. I think that players, it's becoming to me paralysis by analysis. Mm. You can't go that deep into it. You have to have let the analytics set your team and then let your team play. These are the guys that the analytics chose that you think that they could be good. Okay, then let them go. Let them play. Let them play that. Let them play because their talent got you to the point that your analytics say that they're the answer. All right, then don't try to make the answer even tougher. Now, I'm not in the clubhouse now. I can't get near a player.
Right.
I'm just telling you what I see with my eyeballs. I just think that they're overloaded with the information. I think that sometimes it does come out to paralysis by analysis. Let's go to Dave in Maplewood. Dave.
Hi, Michael and Don. Good to talk to you guys again.
Well, thanks for calling.
73 years old, and I've been watching the Yankees probably 60 years. This is probably the toughest to watch them at this particular point. And I, first of all, I want to compliment you, David Cone, Paul Neal, John Flaherty, and it was refreshing to hear Ken Singleton again. You guys have the hardest job in the world. This is as difficult to broadcast as the night of Thurman Munson's funeral. That's how bad this is. I have no solutions, but it's incredible how they're playing. To make a joke, even your haircut epitomizes the plight of the Yankees, Michael.
Wow.
You're right. When you're right, you're right, Dave.
I appreciate what your family has done. God bless you for that. You know, it's amazing. They get 7 runs 2 days ago, and they still get blown out. Yesterday, if they had 3 runs, they win. It's anything that could go wrong is going wrong. And I don't like to give up on my Yankees, and I never do. But, boy, this thing with Sanchez, he is so lost in every way, shape, or form. And I even think some of his sitting down, I got a feeling some of the pitchers have maybe registered some complaints about him, too. He's catching. You know you're going to see the 40-year-old tonight, right? What Davey?
Yeah, I wonder. But that's a good question. I haven't gotten the lineup yet. That's a great question.
But
Dave,
I tell you, you guys keep us together, and I appreciate that more than anything. And Don, you're a Met fan, and I appreciate your fair and even take on the Yankees too.
Thank you. And listen, the Mets. Michael opened the show with it. Should be thanking the Yankees because the Mets are an absolute mess too.
Let me tell you something, Don. This is, you know, sometimes you look inside the numbers and there's a point that a fan base gets so disgusted that that's it. All right, so let's say when the Yankees were leading 6-2 over the Blue Jays, I'm just rounding off now. I think the rating for the game was a 4.
Okay.
Which is really good. Really nice rating. When the Blue Jays scored 10 runs, it went to a 1.3. People gave up.
Of course they did, Michael. It's not like there isn't other things on.
Yeah, they gave
right?
up.
I mean, you got so many other things to do, so much happening. Yeah, people get frustrated. You know, you're asking people, listen, the diehards are the diehards, right? But what really moves the needle are people that just want to be entertained. And more times than not, the Yankees are very entertaining. But now some of their stars are hurt, and the team hasn't been good to watch. What do you expect to happen? The diehards will stick with them because that's their team and they love them. But there's a lot of people who are like, guys, there's got to be something else on. I don't have to sit here for 3 hours and watch this team kick the ball around and walk the bases loaded and give up grand slam home runs and give up 10 runs in an inning. I got better things to do.
Yeah, it's a fear. I mean, again, it's you said it yesterday. It's all a machine. The Yankees own the network. I mean, they're almost a little fortunate that there are not fans in the stands, because if they were playing like this, they wouldn't be getting big crowds, and if they did get crowds, they'd be getting booed. I mean, the consumer is the one that you have to please, and right now this is not pleasing. It's not a pleasing game to watch, and I said this the other day too, Don. This isn't about the Yankees. This is about baseball. The analytic crew, they have decided, and I guess I agree with them, home runs are the most effective way to score. They don't care if you strike out. And they want pitchers to strike people out. It's not as fun a game to watch anymore. It's just not. Runners don't run. There's no hit and runs. There's nothing. You sit there and you wait for the long ball or you strike out and walk. That's not aesthetically pleasing. So they have to go out and find smarter nerds that could come up with some counteract to the fact that it shouldn't only be about home runs. How about moving runners over? How about bunting and stuff? I don't want to sound like the old man on the lawn, but the bottom line is, even if it's a successful way to win, it's not as entertaining. The product is not as entertaining the way it is right now.
You know, strikeouts are supposed to be fun and home runs are supposed to be fun, but if that's all you're getting, and you look at the void at bat that ended the game, all right, you can live with that because, yeah, he's trying to hit a home run to tie the game. That's what. There's nobody on, two outs, but every at bat's like that. And there are times that the game-winning run could be at third base, yep, where a sacrifice fly wins the game. Guys are still trying to do the same thing. That's why putting a runner at second base, nobody's bunted anybody over the third in a sacrifice fly to win the game. They're still launch angle, trying to hit the ball 450 feet, and some guys do. And it has happened. There's been a lot more home runs, but at what price? It's still a sport where you fail 7 out of every 10 times and you're a Hall of Famer. So think about how average guys, you're talking about failing, especially the Yankees now. They're failing at the clip of about 85% of the time because most of the guys are batting .150.
Very quickly, MLB report brought to you by Mazda. Robert Gesellman on the injured list with a fractured rib. So Drew Smith is called back up to replace him.
And DeGrom's going to pitch on Friday after the off day because they want to squeeze another start out of him. But
I mean, if you're the Mets, you want him to start every game.
Well, that's boy, your
he's
best
good.
Hope.
Boy, he's great.
Well, he's something else, Michael. I mean, he's got an excellent. I guess it's between him and Darvish right now.
Right.
Of, you know, he can win his third straight Cy Young.
I mean, I think Darvish would be slightly ahead now.
Yes.
He has a better ERA, but DeGrom strikes out more people, so.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Usually we make a bet for our football picks, but since the weasel didn't pay the bet off from last year, you know, eating crickets, what do we do?
Well, we can't carry stuff over here, Michael. You just can't have it pile up. Have a bunch of IOUs.
Right. So what do we do?
I would think that tomorrow he has to come back from his vacation, stop off someplace, grab some crickets, eat them before the picks tomorrow.
Yeah, but see, he's such a diabolical guy that I could see him getting something that looks like crickets and maybe it's just fried onions. I've got to know it's crickets, so I can't. He can't do this without people checking up on him. I just don't trust him. I'm sorry.
All right, here's what I'll say. Instead of it being some kind of gourmet cricket deal.
Right.
Because you're right. We don't know if it's going to be raisins. We have no idea.
No.
We're a slave to whatever he shows us on the camera. He's got to show us on a piece of paper a cricket crawling up the piece of paper. Take the cricket, put it in his mouth.
No, that wasn't a bet to eat a live cricket.
Well, then
come
I don't
on,
know what to
just
do.
Being mean.
Then what are you doing? What are we doing?
I think we got to wait. I think we got to stockpile bets.
Well, here's the motivation then. He doesn't get the pick until he does it.
And he keeps piling up losses.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. because this part of the fun of this is to see somebody get embarrassed on television or radio. That's what made it work.
Right.
Going back to the old days with you in a Ranger uniform and you eating ketchup.
And you getting your beard shaved.
But if you want to be honest, and there are probably people out there that have been listening to the show from the very beginning, there was a year which you did not get your back waxed, and we survived it.
So, no. But that, I mean, I'm a known welcher. He lost.
But what do you do? I mean, if he doesn't get, because I'm already seeing it on Twitter. You know, what are we going to do with the picks this year? He didn't honor it with the crickets. Then it's just going to look ridiculous.
Andrew said he's had onions before. It's unmistakable. You won't think it's he's had crickets before. It's unmistakable. You won't think it's onions. I don't. But again, we're dealing with a guy that's totally untrustworthy.
I don't have the lack of trust that you do. We're not going to be able to necessarily get it verified. But
well, you know what? Steve Brzezinski says that we should DoorDash crickets to Rosenberg's apartment.
I guess you could do that, right?
Yeah.
And then he's got to show us the receipt that it was crickets. And, yeah, I'm willing to do that. And I think he has to do it. Tomorrow might be too quick. And if he doesn't pick tomorrow's game, which he may not, it's no big deal. But he's got to get it done by Friday. You cannot let him make picks with not honoring the bet from the year before.
It's an outrage. Let's go to the phone.
There has been a pandemic, so I don't want to kill the guy, but we still have to do it.
He eats food, right?
He does.
All right, then he should pay his bet off.
And I'm sure people that eat crickets have been able to eat crickets during the pandemic.
Right. I don't think there's a cricket shortage.
I wouldn't think so, no.
Go to Frank in the Bronx. Frank.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
It's a pleasure to talk to both of you. I'm a longtime fan, but it seems whenever I call, I always get Peter and a guest host. So
you got the A-team, Frank.
Okay, just a couple of quick comments about the Yankees. My observations. I think guys like Ford and Estrada and Talkman, they're career minor leaguers for a reason. You know, you can't catch lightning in a bottle 2 years in a row. That's my belief. Also, another thing, I think since they let Girardi and Tony Pena go, Sanchez has steadily gone downhill. He needed other catches with experience, you know, guys like them, proven major league catches, to stay on him. You know, stay on his you-know-what. He just seems like...
Yeah, but he had a great year in 2018, though, Frank.
Well, if you consider, you know, when you take everything into consideration, you know, the home runs were there, but, you know, his batting average, his defense, you know, he needed those guys to stay on him.
Yeah, but again, I don't want to like harp on that point. He was terrible defensively under Girardi. He had all the pass balls. That's why Girardi ripped him in Cleveland and ended up losing his job because of that.
All right, I understand what you're saying, but I still think he needed Peña and Girardi more than he needs a guy like Aaron Boone.
Okay.
The other thing, I have a question, actually. You know, Judge and Stanton are both very injury-prone guys. They both play the same position. Do you think the Yankees would benefit by splitting their time in right field and DH? Like, have one guy play 3 days a week in the field and the other guy DH the 3 days, you know, back and forth. And, you know, maybe it would keep them healthier a little longer.
Frank, it's a nice thought. I don't think that's the issue with Aaron Judge. I mean, Aaron Judge made a dive on a ball and cracked his rib and slightly punctured his lung. The other times he's been hurt, running the bases, getting hit by a pitch, swinging the bat. It's not him playing right field, and the guy's a plus right fielder. I think that Stanton would be more at risk playing in right field even half the time that he has to DH all the time the way his legs are.
True, but man, this was a team that was not starting him in Tampa because of the wear and tear on his legs because of playing the outfield on the AstroTurf. So you can't rule out the possibility of them thinking down the road, this is somebody that's not going to play full-time in right field, but if Stanton's going to be under contract for the next 7 years, where are you putting him? You're not benching him.
No, he's the DH.
So you're going to have to play him in the outfield.
Stanton?
No.
Judge. Yeah, absolutely.
Because all these people want Judge to become a first baseman, to be a DH. Well, how are you doing that?
Judge's problems are not from right field. They're not. I mean, he excels as a right fielder. You just don't just make that move because you think taking him out of the field. Some people have said, it was earlier this year we asked Aaron Boone that he laughed at us. He laughed.
Right.
He's a right fielder, and he's a great right fielder. He's a plus-plus defender. You're going to just take him out of the field? He either stays healthy or he doesn't. I'm sorry. He has hurt himself swinging the bat, and he has hurt himself running the bases. That has nothing to do with right field. And he's hurt himself when he got hit by a pitch once. Come on. It's not about right field, everybody. It's just not. And I disagree with what Frank said, that I think Boone has been great for Sanchez. Sanchez was having the same problems defensively with Peña and Girardi as he's having now. In fact, they think he's better defensively.
Well,
because by hiring Tanner Swanson and having him go down on one knee when he catches the ball, he's in the top five in framing in all of Major League Baseball. So they got exactly what they wanted.
But they wanted a softer touch, too. Because Girardi, as a former catcher, was going to get in his face. And they didn't want anybody getting in Sanchez's face. But how has that worked out?
I will tell you this, Don. If he finishes the season like this, they're going to have to reconsider that he's their future. Because if you pile this on to what happened at the end of last year, the second half,
sure,
you just can't keep going to the bank with that check. You just can't. At some point, they're going to give up. Because at some point, they're going to have to step up and sign him to a contract. Because he's going to be a free agent. That's not this year, but it would be next year. Are you going to do it? I don't think there's any way you commit to him. And everybody keeps saying, well, they got to go get Real Muto. Real Muto's going to be like $20 million a year, and he's 30 years old. I think he's a great player. But first of all, you'd be bidding against the Phillies, who have an awful lot of money, too. I don't think they're going to let him get away. And if Steve Cohen buys the Mets, you don't think they're going to go all in? You're going to pay that much money on a five-year deal for a catcher, taking him to the age of 35? I don't think it's wise. I'd love to have him next year. I'd love to have him the year after that, but that's not the rules of engagement. You're going to have to sign into a five-year deal at the age of 30 as a catcher.
But you're going to have to reevaluate Sanchez.
I agree.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Bottom line is we're on our own. No help coming from anywhere. Challenge is to find a way to get through this storm.
If the team falls flat after the meeting, which is what Brian Cashman had before yesterday's game, where exactly do you go?
We have not played to our capabilities, and obviously the last couple of weeks has been a rough stretch to get us to that point.
So where do the Yankees go?
We still have time here to turn this thing around. It's there for the taking for us. We don't need anyone's help right now. We need to play well. And if we do that, the season will take care of itself.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. So we've been talking about the Yankees' 2-1 loss to the Blue Jays. They try to salvage the final game of the three-game set tonight in Buffalo with Davey Garcia on the mound against Tanner Roark. The Mets are playing the Orioles. And, you know, we've got to give the Mets some equal time. There's some things that are beyond their control. I mean, if we're going to give the Yankees a bit of a pass because of their injuries, the injury to Syndergaard was a killer for the Mets. And then Stroman opting out was a killer for the Mets. Because the thing that the Mets are having problems with is getting a starter on the mound every single day that's going to do a good job. So if you had Syndergaard and you had Stroman, I think it would be a completely different situation at Citi Field. And right now, Don, I'm not sure they make the playoffs. How are they getting in? I mean, they're well below 500, and I think there will be teams that get into the playoffs under 500, but you're going to have to be close. I mean, you have to be like 29 and 31 or 28 and 32. Are the Mets going to get to that?
I don't know, Michael. And you got the Brewers and the Rockies before you even get to the Giants or the Marlins for those final playoff spots. You know, Waka was supposed to be a part of this rotation, and he's just been awful the last couple of starts. So that's another acquisition by Brody Van Wagenen that hasn't worked out. So you're trying to survive the loss of Syndergaard, but you kind of knew that going into the season, right? Because it was right when they suspended the original spring training that we found out he was gone. And Stroman was a blow. And Matt's being ineffective and then hurt and ineffective again and moving to the bullpen and all that, Listen, that's been a problem that goes beyond Brody Van Wagenen, but really has not gotten any pitching. And then you've got to put Lugo into the rotation, which then takes away from the bullpen, which is a struggle. And they just don't have the pitching, Michael. They just don't.
And they don't have the bullpen.
And that's part of it.
Starters and the bullpen.
You know, because I think they can score, even though Pete Alonso isn't having quite the year that he had in his rookie year. I think they can probably score enough runs to win games most nights if the pitching gave you an opportunity. And it just doesn't on a day-in, day-out basis to believe that they're going to be able to take advantage of these games that they have left to try to get ahead. And listen, I don't think the Giants are very good, but give them credit. You know, last night they came back from 5-1 down. They scored in four innings, the Giants, last night, Michael, where there's two outs and nobody on. So they're getting clutch hitting. They're a young team that doesn't know any better, right? And that's the thing that's scary is, like, the Giants and the Marlins, they had zero expectations. The Mets, there was some expectations even after Syndergaard got hurt. Certainly their expectations through the roof for the Yankees. So you can't tell me that pressure doesn't get applied here to some teams and to others that they're just freewheeling and they're taking advantage of it. Short season, let's see what we can do here. And that's what the Mets have to go up against, because I think the Marlins and the Giants are riding a wave here, and I wouldn't be surprised if they hang on.
I look at the Marlins, and I think Mattingly is the manager of the year. I mean, because when you consider what they went through, all the players they lost to COVID, all the games they lost to COVID, yeah, all the doubleheaders that they played, to keep them together and to be competitive, it's incomprehensible that they're in a playoff position with what they went through.
It was a fait accompli that they were going to be one of the worst teams in baseball. And they were the example of, boy, everybody would think that this was a ridiculous season if the Marlins, you know, ended up making a run. Well, I still believe that it's a legitimate season and the Marlins are going to make a run. Because, listen, they're playing the same schedule as the Mets, right? And they played the Mets toe-to-toe. The Mets are done with the Marlins, so they can't catch them as far as, you know, head-to-head is concerned. So I think they got an excellent chance to make it. I mean, the Rockies are under 500. The Brewers are under 500. And these are teams we thought were going to be able to contend. Everybody was high on the Reds to start the season. They're six games under 500. The defending champion Nationals are nine games under 500. It's a crazy year. But give credit to the teams that are getting it done. And they're young and they're having a good time with it. Maybe that's the point, Michael, is that these young teams, they don't know from playing in an empty building. Most of these guys played in the minor leagues where there's probably only 3,000 or 4,000 people watching their games. They're just happy to be there.
And I give the Giants credit for not dumping players too. I mean, they could have traded Johnny Cueto and they didn't.
No, they held on to him and they've had their share of injuries too. So they're getting kids that a lot of people have never heard of before and are playing just tremendous. So I think they're when I say legit in this circumstance, I guess they're legit. Over 162 games, Michael, a lot of the warts would begin to show.
Oh, absolutely.
But I mean, listen, I bet you, even getting back to the Yankees, Michael, I'd have to look it up, but I wouldn't be surprised if the 27 Yankees might have played 500 ball over a 40 game stretch, right? I mean, it's not that crazy to think that a team, you know, they get lethargic in the middle of things. They just, they play 21 and 21 over the last, you know, 42 games. But when there's a 60-game schedule, that's the majority of your year. But everybody knew the rules of engagement going in. And I don't want to hear from people, Met fans too, oh, well, this season doesn't mean anything anyway. Well, you're watching the games. You're getting into it. You're fired up, mad that the Yankees are playing as poorly as they are. So I guess it does mean something. Otherwise, you wouldn't be watching. You wouldn't care. So you can't sit there and care and then tell me when it doesn't work out, well, the season never meant anything anyway.
Look at the situation in the American League right now. So the Yankees have the eighth spot. They're 21 and 21. The Orioles have the same amount of losses. They're 20 and 21. Detroit has the same amount of losses. They're 19 and 21. So the Orioles have played one fewer game than the Yankees, and the Tigers have the games in hand. They've played two fewer. Then you look at the Astros, who are playing terrible baseball now. They're 22 and 21, but they're locked in because they have the second spot in the West behind the A's. And then Seattle's right there with 23 losses. So the Yankees have to play better. I know that sounds like the theater of the obvious. In order to make the playoffs, they have 21 losses, same as the Orioles, same as the Tigers. It's just unbelievable to me. And Minnesota has the seventh spot at 27 and 18. White Sox lead the Central, Cleveland second, Minnesota has the seventh wild card. They have a nice lead. They have three games in the loss column. And then it's the Yankees, the Orioles, the Tigers, and the Mariners. And really, everybody, think about it. The three teams that I mentioned other than the Yankees are all in teardowns. That they shouldn't be in this situation at all. They just shouldn't be. So it's kind of stunning.
If the Yankees lose tonight and the Orioles beat the Mets,
the Yankees
will officially be out of the postseason.
If it ended today, yes.
Yeah, and that's just, it's hard to fathom. It really is.
J. Jack Curry of Yes put something together. So the Yankees are 5-15 over the last 20. If they were 10-10, they'd be a game and a half behind the Rays. All they had to do was play 500, and they'd be a game and a half behind the Rays. Now it's over, I think, with the Rays. I don't think they're going to. They haven't. Let's see. What's the exact number here? The exact number is the Rays have 15 losses. The Yankees have 21. They're six back in the loss column with 18 games left to play. So the Rays are out of. You're done playing them. So you kind of control your own destiny because you have eight games, including tonight, remaining against Toronto. So if you win five of them, which is not, it's not crazy, then you can gain ground on Toronto. But Toronto's three games up in the loss column, so you might have to go 6-2 in those eight games.
But the fact is, Michael, I think they still make it because I don't believe in the teams that are chasing after them.
Well, you know what, Don, your tune could change starting tomorrow. Four games against the Orioles will decide it, I think.
Right. Now, but even if they make it, Michael, are they playing the kind of baseball right now that makes you believe that they're just going to be able to turn it around?
See, that's what's funny. If they make it, I think then you hit the reset button, and if you have Judge and Stanton back, they're as dangerous as any team in the playoffs. Right. I really believe that.
But remember, it's also a team that presently constituted hasn't made it to the World Series during this run.
Right.
So, you know, that's what's scary, too. Like, we're still counting on this team to win a championship, but they haven't won yet. And they haven't gone to the World Series yet. You know, 18 and 19 were considered disappointments based on what they were able to accomplish in the regular season. And that's with a healthy Judge. And that was with a healthy Stanton. But you're right. You got to be in it to win it. I think it was Ian O'Connor that tweeted, you kind of look at the 99 Knicks. If you remember the 99 Knicks, that was
the team that beat the Heat. Yeah.
That was the lockout season. I think it was a 50-game regular season. The Knicks were very average, ended up being an 8 seed, and they made a run right to the finals against the Spurs. I guess you have to look at. It's like, listen, you hope that the regular season doesn't matter, and then you just get in and everything falls into place. And that's, like, I guess, what you hope for. But right now, it's going to be a dogfight to get in. And I mentioned this yesterday, too. All right, you get in, but what if you have to pitch Tanaka and Cole in games 59 and 60 to lock up the spot? And now you don't have your two best pitchers going into the best of three.
No, it's tough. It's tough. You and it looks like they might be playing till the last day to do it. So, and then if you lose Cole starting game one of the best of three, and it's three games in a row, there's no off day, there's no travel day, he's not pitching then.
Right,
and that would be tough.
So then what do you look at? Like, if they had to do that, and again, I don't know how it's all going to work itself out, like who would be available, but if you had to pitch Tanaka and Cole in the last two games of the regular season to clinch a playoff spot, what would your rotation look like?
Might have to be J. Happ, or how the kid finishes.
Right. So now that changes everything, right? I mean, now you know the guy that you spent all the money on to help you out in the postseason may not be able to even pitch in the postseason. So even making it, Michael, still could compromise you in that best of three.
All right, Don. What happened 45 years ago today?
45 years ago today would have been 1975.
I love how you did that. Yep.
So September 9th, 1975. Wow. It's got to be something baseball, right?
No.
Really?
No. Something entertainment.
Was it a birth?
No. Entertainment.
Oh, I thought it was somebody in entertainment.
No.
The nudes are back.
Was it ever released?
Who?
Was a movie released?
No, a show premiered on ABC.
In 1975, that wasn't Happy Days because that was 74.
Look at you. All right, I'll give you another clue. Okay. One of the great theme songs of all time.
One of the great theme songs? Because you think that Making It...
That was an outstanding theme song.
It was a great theme song, but that was 79, and that
No, this is a classic theme song. Even you would say this is a great theme song.
Is it Three's Company?
Nope. That wasn't a good theme song. Come and knock on my door.
I'm trying to... ABC show, 1975.
All right, another clue. Somebody on the show ended up being a huge breakout star. Never looked back.
Huge breakout star and never looked back.
Went in the movies and that was it.
On ABC?
Mm-hmm.
Great theme song. God, I don't know.
All right, I'm going to have to tell you, and you're going to beat yourself up.
Is there any other clue you can give me?
All right, there is a lineage from that to Saturday Night Fever to Grease.
Oh, my God, of course, that's right.
Welcome back, Cotter debuted. Yes.
John Sebastian with the...
Welcome back. That's classic, right?
And I was talking about this with Nancy the other day.
This is a great song.
15th anniversary, Nancy.
Happy anniversary. But you guys have been together like 40 years, right?
Yes.
This legal for 15.
Yeah, it's where I really made the full commitment. I remember when that show first came out. It was a big deal because my dad at PSE&G worked with his father.
Who?
John Travolta.
Oh, really?
Because John Travolta was from Englewood, New Jersey, so he was a local guy. And we were excited about the start of the show. But as a young kid, so 1975, I was 7. All right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember asking my dad, what was the original show? And my father was like, what are you talking about? I said, when you were a kid, was there another show that the show's called Welcome Back? Was there a show, Cotter, back in the day? Like, I thought that it was a spinoff from an older show. Because what are they welcoming him back for?
But he was welcome back because he left. He went to college, and he came back to his old neighborhood
right,
to teach.
And he came back to teach, which you can understand as a 52-year-old. But at 7, I'm thinking, they're welcoming him back from what? There must have been another show. And he had the great joke at the end of every episode.
Yeah. Well, not really a great joke.
Well, I know, but it was just a great concept. And one of the first early, in my opinion, mismatched marriage couples, because I think he was way over his skis.
You think Gabe Kaplan wasn't equal to Marcia Strassman?
No.
Oh, my goodness, that is an outrageous take.
I had a huge crush on her when I was...
Really?
Yeah.
When you were 7?
Yes. You don't think she was attractive?
Well,
I mean,
she was
kind of
cute.
Like a hippie,
yeah.
You know, but I thought she was really cute.
I gotta be honest with you, Don. It's a little stunning to me because I never even thought like that when I was 7.
No?
No.
I mean, I still think it now when I look at the...
Well, I understand you thinking it now. You're 60 years old, but you know, at 7...
I don't think Gabe Kaplan can pull that in real life.
Oh, I bet you he could. He's a big gambler. He's a
bon
vivant.
Great poker player.
Yeah. You know what I have right here, don't you know, Don? Today's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Nissan and Bigelow T.
Yeah, I saw it come over.
It just came over. DJ LeMahieu starts at third. Luke Voit's at first. Aaron Hicks in center. Clint Frazier in right. Gleyber Torres at short. The DH is Miguel Andujar. Brett Gardner in left. Gary Sanchez is catching, so it's not Eric Kratz catching the youngster, Davey Garcia, and he's going to bat eighth. Gary Sanchez dropped to eighth, and Tyler Wade is going to play second base, and he's going to bat ninth. So there's a couple of things it tells you. They have no faith whatsoever in Andujar as the third baseman. And he's a little bit shaky. I got to be honest with you. He's been a little shaky. So he's been hitting great, so they're locking him in at DH because you would think they'd want to make Davey Garcia comfortable and have Kratz catch him, but instead, rather than DHing Sanchez, they're going to have Sanchez catch him. And that's where we are right now with the Yankee starting lineup. Davey Garcia gets the start. That's today's Yankee starting lineup. Brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now, get great offers across their full line. Shop your local Nissan store at NissanUSA.com and Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael Kay Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees.
Now, we've gotten the suggestion from Ricky from Queens, who says, because of the pandemic, and if you can't have him eat the crickets before Friday, you should allow a one-time buyout by donating a sizable donation to charity.
No.
You could run it up the pole and let the audience decide the charity.
Yeah, I saw that. No. I don't think that works. Well, I mean, we want there's no embarrassment to donating to charity. All of a sudden, he looks like a hero. We want him to eat crickets because he was so bad. Let's go to Vicky in New Haven. Vicky.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I love playing trivia, and I had the answer. I knew it. Oh. Knew it.
Very good.
Okay.
It was a really good show.
One thing I want to say is, why don't they lead off with Gardner?
He hasn't hit. He's hitting like 150, though.
I know, but he was magic when they were bringing him, you know, to lead him off before.
But he was younger then.
Yeah, but he doesn't. He's batting 150.
DJ LeMahieu has been fine leading off. I mean, Gardner. Yeah. You know, I'm a big Gardner fan, Vicky, but he's been terrible offensively.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just what I observe from watching it on TV, and I keep saying it to my husband. Why don't they put Gardner back to lead off?
And I really think the answer is as simple as he's not hitting. I mean, maybe they would consider it. He's just not hitting.
Yeah, well, maybe they should try it. You never know. But my second point is Judge. We noticed when he was playing that he would be jumping up and, you know, with his arm and jumping down and being happy and everything. Wouldn't that affect his landing, you know, of getting hurt?
Oh, you mean when they win a game, he jumps up in the outfield?
Yeah, or when they hit a home run and he's running around and they jump up, you know. He injured himself.
Yeah, but Vicky, if that is in fact the issue, then they're in trouble. If he can't celebrate because he'll get hurt, he hasn't gotten hurt by jumping up and down.
No, so
that's the issue. Yeah,
I do think he's injury prone. I mean, we can make excuses all we want. He's 28 years old, and he's missed a lot of time because of different injuries, circumstances, or whatever. Sorry, as much as it bothers our producer Andrew Gunling, Carson Wentz is injury prone. If you get hurt a lot, Michael, you're injury prone.
It's not fair.
You can make excuses all you want. A 28-year-old shouldn't miss this much time.
Let's go to Dominic in Howard Beach. Dominic.
How you doing, Michael K? Thank God I got rid of that woman. Brett Gardner should never be in this lineup ever again. Guy hasn't hit even his weight, I don't think. And when you mentioned analytics before, it's ruining this game. Yankees sit around waiting for the 3-run home run that's never going to come. Their last 8 home runs have been a solo shot. I seen that stat on the watch the game yesterday.
Yes, it is.
A couple weeks ago, watching the Tampa Bay Ray game, Brett Gardner comes up with 1st and 2nd, nobody out, down by 2 runs. Why isn't he bunting? He is not hitting a 3-run home run this year. He barely gets the ball out of the infield. Bunt the runners over, get a productive out. We never bunt. The bunts, like, disappeared in the game of baseball.
There's a reason for that, because the stats tell you not to do it.
I know,
ruined this game big time.
This is where the analytics drive me crazy. I'm sorry. When you're batting a .150, you don't have a kick coming. I'm sorry. You know, lay down a bunt. Do something.
Yeah, but to say he's not going to hit a home run, Donnie, he had 28 home runs last year.
What does he have this year?
I think he has 3.
Okay, we live in the moment. The guy's got 3 home runs. He's batting a .150. He's 0 for his last 11 with runners in scoring position. So I don't know. I don't need a visor and a calculator to kind of figure out, Michael, that if he can lay down a bunt, now he moves the runners over. He's got a better chance of doing that than launching a 3-run home run. For him in particular, I get the whole overall, it doesn't make sense to bunt in this game because you're giving the other team an out and that's what they're looking for. But when you're batting a .150 with 3 home runs, then I don't know why exactly you're playing. You're telling me the percentages are telling you that at that moment he's going to hit a 3-run home run and give you the lead?
Yeah, but there are numbers, and I don't have them right in front of me, that 1st and 2nd, nobody out, you have a better chance to score 2 runs than you do 2nd and 3rd, 1 out, because you have you have 1 fewer at bat to get those runs in.
I understand, but let's dig a little deeper. But when your batter can't,
but then he shouldn't be in the lineup, Donna.
But he is. Yeah, because that's the problem, is that he's a one of many that are in that situation. You think he's the only one not hitting?
No, everybody's not hitting.
I don't think Gary Sanchez can lay down a bunt, so I would say no. Even though he's batting, you know, barely batting his weight, he probably has got a better chance of hitting home run than laying down a bunt. But Brett Gardner, who's been in this league forever,
and he's a good bunter.
To beat it out, and he's a good bunter to me. So don't give me the whole, well, the analytics tell you this, that. Well, did the analytics tell you that you've got a guy in the lineup batting a .150? That's the problem, is that sometimes you got to think outside the numbers because you've got a very unusual set of circumstances where the team can't hit.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
By the way, I wonder how Andrew feels about Jimmy Butler playing so well. You know, he used to be a Sixer. Don't know if Andrew knows that.
Oh, he knows.
All they had to do was fire the coach that they just fired before he became a free agent. He would have stayed. So,
God, it sounds to me, like Michael, like you're not trusting the process.
God hates me.
The process wasn't worth it. Because they never won a championship. So they completely took 4 years out of their existence of non-competitive basketball to do what? To do nothing.
It's
they
not
got nothing. Andrew should be ashamed to root for that team.
No, because
anyway,
I've had it.
Yeah, you should. So the Heat end up beating the Bucks. And right away, you know, Giannis is like, just like LeBron, he's going to end up leaving there because they can't win in Milwaukee. And despite the fact that the guy says to Yahoo, I'm not somebody who walks around mountains. I want to climb over it. I'm paraphrasing it. He said, a wall doesn't stop me. I want to run through it. I want to stay here. But that doesn't help the narrative of speculating where he could end up. Maybe the guy actually wants to stay there and make it work. Maybe that's what he wants to do. Maybe he doesn't want to have a ready-made microwavable championship. Maybe he wants to win in Milwaukee. Instead, now that this is going to be the whole thing the whole next year and during whatever, how long the offseason is going to be, Don, what are they going to do with Giannis? Well, what they have to do with Giannis is get him better players. And by letting Brogdon go away because they didn't want to go over the luxury tax, made the team worse. And let's not discount the fact that the guy's ankle was shattered. Nah, that's too dramatic, but it was not in good shape. He was not the same player, and they didn't have a chance against Miami. So now we're talking about, well, they got to get Chris Paul. Chris Paul makes $40 million a year. But I just hate the fact now it's going to be such a narrative that it's going to be a thing. Well, he's going to want to get out of Milwaukee and, you know, start his own super team. Just stop. Why can't you win there? You had the best record there.
But you can't believe what players tell you.
But he's on the record as saying, I want it to work here.
Well, didn't Kemba Walker say he wanted to stay in Charlotte?
He did. They didn't want him. He didn't. They didn't give him the offer. He wanted to stay in Charlotte. He was true to his word.
We'll see what happens with Milwaukee, but I mean, I hope he stays there. But that's always going to be the narrative, because that's how everything got started in the NBA, right? Is that I can't win here. I got to go someplace else. So is Milwaukee going to become LeBron's original Cleveland, where he's got to go someplace else to win? But give him some help. But that's still, you know, it's a tough. I give him credit for coming back down 3-0 to win that game in the second half without him. I thought that showed me something. But once they went down 3-0, Michael, there was no way they were going to come back.
And we're in such a, like, what have you done yesterday? So Budenholzer, who goes from being considered one of the best coaches now, let's talk about firing him. My goodness.
I know, but that's the way life is in the NBA. It's about winning a championship. They were expected to compete for one and get bounced in the second round.
And then Billy Donovan's leaving Oklahoma City. Why? Well, why wouldn't they sign him to an extension? What more could you get out of that team? I thought he did a great job. He took Houston to the last minute of the seventh game. Sports tough now. I mean, it is tough. It's tougher than it's ever been there. No five-year plans anymore, Don. No five-year plans. It's just not.
And I think it's harder to win now than it's ever been.
I would agree.
And so these coaches are hired to be fired. I get it. But, you know, there's only one team that can win a championship. So you're just going to fire these coaches every time they come up a little short, and just instead of just waiting it out and see what happens. But everybody's impatient. And when you get the label like Milwaukee did of a team that was expected to, hey, not just make it to the finals, Michael, many people thought that they could win the whole thing.
I did. I picked them to win.
Get bounced in the second round and embarrassingly get bounced in the second round.
But the thing that takes the sting away is that he was hurt. Now, if he was 100% healthy and they got bounced, then I would look at it somewhat askance.
But how was he in the first three games?
He was hurting in the third game, too. He was all right, but, I mean, Miami was better. But I would like a fully engaged Giannis to see how they would do.
So that's the negative side of basketball. The positive side, is there anybody better than Pat Riley? Honestly, is there anybody better at basketball other than, like, playing, but as a coach, as an executive, How the heck does he do it?
And the thing is, he wins with different incarnations of his team. I mean, he just completely revamps the roster and does something different.
One before LeBron James, maybe has a chance to win after LeBron James. I don't know if they'll win the title, Michael, but they're playing in the conference final. They can get to the final.
Absolutely. They've got it. They can beat the Celtics if the Celtics hold on and end up beating Toronto. And also, speaking of LeBron, we talked about this earlier. Boy, if the Lakers play the way they played last night in the fourth quarter, they're going to win the title. I don't know if they could play like that every single game, but Rondo was hitting big threes. He's a big addition for them that they didn't have in their first round series. And they played suffocating defense on a team that, you know, makes its living scoring, and they could not score in the fourth quarter. They took the three-point shot away from Harden. They completely stopped Westbrook. They were outstanding in that game. I was stunned by how good they were because, you know, a commitment to defense is just that. It's a commitment. I thought they were great. I thought that was an impressive performance.
Yeah, that's hard to say they're not winning the title. Now, the Clippers will be tough. Clippers still got to get back past their series. They're only up 2-1, but that looks like a team that's
I want that matchup. That's going to be great for the NBA. Clippers and the Lakers will be the final.
Well, that was what we thought going in, right? That's what we thought was the best chance even before the pandemic was going to happen. You know, maybe the Nuggets, maybe the Rockets, but these were the two teams we felt. And you said it earlier, and it's true, this will be the final. Because I'm not sure that many people will give either the Heat or the Celtics a chance to beat the winner of Clippers-Lakers. But, you know, stranger things have happened, for sure. And this would be the format and the year for strange things to happen.
Big New York City news, Don.
Okay.
Prohibition on indoor dining is going to be lifted on September 30th. The governor says restaurants can operate indoors at 25% capacity. And I know there are a lot of businesses hurting, so I hope that this helps them just a bit.
Well, this is what's big, Michael, because the outdoor dining was only going to work for, what, another month?
Yeah.
You know, and or maybe a little longer than that, but once you get into October and the weather starts to turn, I don't know if people want to sit outside and have a meal when it's, you know, 35, 40 degrees outside. So hopefully by the time we get there, it expands to 50, 75%, something like that. New Jersey's been open since September 1st for 25%. So we're getting there. It's slow. But that's going to be so. There's got to be restaurants that are just dying to have that kind of influx of cash.
They're going out of business, Don. It's awful. But I can't complain what the governor's doing. I mean, he's trying to save lives too. But I mean, there's a lot of things to consider. It's a very tough decision. I mean, today my kids ended up going to school, and I'm very nervous about it. But I mean, you have to try to return to some kind of life. And hope that everything, you know, you trust the people in charge that they're doing the right thing. Let's go to Vito in South Amboy. Vito.
So, Mike, how are you, brother?
Good. How you doing, Vito?
Mike, I've said this in the past, and I go all the way back to Sonny Gray. But I feel deep down in my heart that Sanchez ruined this team. He caused Girardi his job. They put my, what's his name? Cashman put all his eggs in one basket with this guy, and he's been trying and trying. And I was really hoping that by the trade deadline, they would have done something to get rid of him, man.
Yeah, but I mean, Vito, if you trade him now, you're trading at the lowest price you could. You don't sell an asset that's distressed. This isn't even distressed.
This is.
And you know what the Yankees' greatest fear is, Don? They get rid of him and he unlocks it somewhere else. That's their greatest fear because it's in there. I mean, the guy hit more home runs at a certain point of his career than anybody in Major League history other than Ryan Howard. He's a special offensive talent, but it seems like it's gone away.
Hey, there's a lot of question marks around this team, Michael. Like, when was the last time a pitcher got better when they came to the Yankees? I'm not going to kill Cole because, you know, it's only been a handful of starts, but certainly does not look like the same pitcher he was in Houston. You know, and you got to eventually start unlocking things yourself, right?
Here's
got to be the team.
Here's Aaron Boone's comment talking to the media, Don. So much confidence in my guys. Today's the day we're going to turn it around. Gone are moral victories. We got to go out and get it done.
But when does it just you're beating a dead horse? I mean, optimism's great, and I think a lot of players do respond to optimism. But at what point do you end up looking like a fool? Being optimistic when everything around you is on fire.
I will tell you this. If I was a betting man, I would put a lot of money on the Yankees tonight. I think they're going to win. I think they can hit Tanner Roark, and I think the kid will be good enough that he'll be able to tamp them. I'd be surprised if they lost tonight.
Well, that's fine, and I think there's something to that, Michael, but at what point does Boone sound like the band playing as the Titanic is sinking? Right? Do you not notice what's going on here? I mean, yeah, you believe in your team, but now it just kind of rings hollow because what exactly do you believe in? Now, you gave me some hard information that they should be able to hit Roark. There's certain matchups that help. But 5-15 over the last 30 games, Michael, that's optimism kind of just sounds ridiculous at this point, doesn't it?
He almost sounds a little too sunshiny, but I understand what he's trying to do, but maybe just back off a little bit. Don't rip your team, but to say, you know, I was listening in the car to his post-game press conference, and, you know, he's talking about how good Gary Sanchez, he was 0-4. Right. So I know what he's trying to do. I know the rules of engagement. I understand all that, but I don't think it's optimum for him to look like that, if that makes sense. Because you don't want to be that guy where everything around you is in flames. It's like the guy in Animal House.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon.
All is well, yeah.
And what happened to Kevin Bacon? He got flattened.
Yeah.
Right? And he's stuck in the sidewalk because that's what happens is that now it just doesn't, it rings hollow. Now it just saying that, now what are you, just being a cheerleader? You know, you got to give me something. I understand that he got this job because he's not panicking when there's panic. And he's not rubbing his face with, like, no answers, because that's what killed Girardi. But when there is reason to panic, I think there's nothing wrong with at least having some sort of a sense of urgency.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.